I Hate Politics is a podcast about a human activity we love to hate. I'm Sunil Dasgupta. David Trone's primary campaign for Maryland's U.S. Senate seat was one of the most expensive races in the country, let alone that it was a primary. He spent $60 million to his opponent Angela Alsobrooks's $6 million. And then he lost. It wasn't even close. Neither Trone nor Alsobrooks joined the show for candidate interviews, so I can't really speak to their thinking. But now, with the dust from the primary settled, I invited Trone's political director, Michelle Ingwafin, to reflect on the campaign and the lessons learned. If David Trone is an outsider in Maryland's Democratic establishment, spending unimaginable money to make up for that status, Michelle Ingwafin is the consummate insider, having served on the Montgomery County Democratic Central Committee and the Maryland Democratic Party, and as a Black woman in politics, somewhat unexpectedly, pitching for a white man over a Black woman. I Hate Politics is a podcast about our neighborhoods, workplaces, schools and streets, and our local governments as they function in diverse and democratic societies. This means our politics are messy, dirty, sometimes corrupt, with often self-serving politicians. But no matter how much we hate politics, we are never exempt from it, even when we refuse to participate. In fact, the purpose of politics is to keep society functioning precisely when we don't agree with each other, like now. Music for this episode comes from Silver Spring rock and roll musician and writer John Braden, who performs under the band name Mr. Tree Frog. The songs come from his latest album, Poke.
Light it up. Need every dancer a dead man laid. Hey! What if I told you? Don't have the answer to win or lose. The cloud ain't great. Sugar is better in dark out ways. Come alive.
Michelle Ingwafin, welcome to I Hate Politics.
Oh, thank you for having me. So I'm happy to be here.
So now that your job as the political director of the David Trone campaign is ending, are you getting some sleep? Are you recuperated?
I've done a lot of campaigns. I'm surprisingly refreshed, even though it was a long cycle. I didn't get the usual post-campaign flu. I actually got sick GOTV weekend.
You got to say what GOTV is.
Get out the vote. Friday and Saturday before the election, I had a crazy head cold. I literally was throwing back DayQuil to like make it through. But then I was fine within like 36 hours. But post-election, I feel good. I booked my little post-election vacation. I'm fine.
Okay. All right. How long did you work for the Trone campaign?
I started in August 2023.
Okay. All right. You know, you've done other campaigns. What is the difference between working in a very well-resourced campaign and others?
Yeah. I mean, I think from a campaign perspective, I have worked for candidates that have to do copious hours of call time.
Call time is when candidates are scheduled to make fundraising calls.
Not having to do 20 hours of call time a week, right? Like, in order to be able to pay people, that make a difference, because that means that's more time you're able to spend in the community. It's more time you're able to sit in meetings and talk to people about their businesses or labor or community issues. It also means that you have more staff. If we want to do a meet and greet event and a person, like, we can't find a host, we can just go to a restaurant. Once we started getting protesters and stuff like that, and we had trackers and things that we do events, I don't want someone like that showing up in someone's home.
So what did you do to get to the Democratic establishment? I mean, in the end, they didn't support him.
I'm a validator. I think I have worked in a lot of establishment, party, committee type places. So I think that provided a little bit of validity, especially because I'm a known person in the state. Like, I wasn't some random person you went and picked up in Kansas and like dropped in Maryland, right? So like, I have my own relationships that I'm able to trade on, to talk to people, to reach out to people, and I'm not just some random person. So I think that helped a lot in getting some folks on board. And like, the congressman does have relationships, right? So some of it is just like getting, like, it was kind of like getting people off the off the sideline and being like, hey, like, we need you. When I started the race, we were the underdog.
He had a ton of money, a great deal of name recognition, two of the biggest things that we believe works in politics.
He didn't start with a lot of name recognition. If anything, I think the difference is that in the DC media market, she probably had more earned media name ID. Because like, your county executives are just like on the news more. So like, outside of when David's running for office, how often do you see your congresspeople on the news? Usually if your congressperson's on the news outside of when they're running for office or like a big bill is being announced, it's usually not good. In the Baltimore media market, neither of them, like, that is not where they live. That's not where they work. So they both have to build neighbors. So I'm not saying he remained the underdog, because he obviously started spending and the race turned around and he was in the lead. At one point, we were in the lead by double digits. When I came on back in August, and a week after I started, Van Hollen endorsed. And like, a couple days after that, like, this person endorsed and this person endorsed and this person endorsed. And at the time, we weren't on TV. When Senator Van Hollen endorsed, my mom was not in the country at the time. She's retired and lives part-time in Cameroon, because my family's from. She texted me and she was like, I don't know, Michelle, I really like Senator Van Hollen. I don't know what's going on. She's like, rough way to start a job.
Speak to that. Speak to why and how the Democratic establishment did not, in the end, side with Trone. What were they choosing, in effect?
Our delegation is all men. This cycle gave us the opportunity to completely change our delegation. Like, we have younger people in the delegation. We have women in the delegation, we have women of color in the delegation. And I think the opportunity to do that and support that and be behind that, strategically speaking, makes sense. I think it makes sense for men who are in elected office to show, like, I support women in office as my colleagues, as my friend, as my senator. Like, I want more women in office. I want to change what our federal delegation looks like. I think it's hard to look at your elected delegation and see nothing but men.
I sense a certain kind of glee about the fact that the delegation is actually changing in favor of women. And I imagine that there is that one part of you that feels tension between your candidate and the larger good.
I will say this. A question that I got a lot from people during the primary was, how can you work for him when there is a Black woman running? Or people would make the statement, which I actually found offensive, which was like, oh, you're only working for him because he's like paying you well, which like kind of implies that like someone can just pay me to go against my values, or like I can be bought and paid for, right? Like, I'm just a hired mercenary here to do whatever. I have worked with Emily's List. I've worked with Run for Something. I've worked with Emerge. So many of our organizations across the country that work to elect women, that work to elect people of color, that work to elect young people. everyone deserves to see themselves reflected in their elected officials. I also will always want the person I think is best for the job. And in my, like me personally, that's why I was working for David. It does not mean that every single time I'm going to choose the white man over a woman or the older person over the younger person. I think a lot of people made judgments and made a lot of assumptions. And I think it even happened with some of our endorsers, which I think is really unfortunate. But I think equality, in my mind, doesn't mean that every single time I have to pick diversity. It means that every single time I have to have the option.
Okay. Speak to why you think David Trone is, in your view, in that context, in that very limited context, the better candidate than Angela Alsobrooks.
Yeah. I mean, I looked at what he did in Congress and was like, I want that for the rest of Maryland.
Specifically what? Because from the outside, I'll tell you, they're literally indistinguishable from a programmatic point of view. But you are seeing a difference. So tell me about it.
Being an elected official is about more than what you're going to vote for and what you're going to vote against. And it's about what else are you going to do? Because there are going to be times in the next 6 years where things aren't going to move. Where, like, whether it's reproductive justice bills, whether it's labor, whether it's climate change related, we might not be in the majority. They might not be able to move a piece of legislation. So what else are you going to do?
Okay, what else are you going to do versus what else would Alsobrooks have done? That's the question. Yes, same.
Right. And I think from listening to both of them, I heard what one person was going to do and what they have done. And I didn't hear what the other person was going to do. When it comes to labor, for example, David tells a story of helping SEIU 500 with American University, right? Like, those are the stories I want to hear. When I think a paint mill or like some mill closed in the district, and these union folks were losing their jobs, like the office helped them get a good deal. So that way, like, they're closing the mill, people are losing their jobs, and making sure that they were able to pay their mortgage, they were getting COBRA, right? Like, when the Mack truck plant out in Hagerstown, he helped them when they were out on the picket line. Like, those are the things I want to hear about. I know, I don't think either of them, when it comes to voting, are going to be that indistinguishable, because at the end of the day, that's the thing with the Senate, that's the thing with the House. Like, you're going to vote however your leadership tells you to, and it is with rare exception that people don't do that. So what I want to hear is, what else are you going to do? What are the other ways you are going to help? And when I took the job and I looked at the two candidates, I didn't hear that from both of them.
Alsobrooks has been the county executive. She's been the state's attorney. So, you know, it's not like she doesn't do that kind of thing. That's her regular work, I would imagine.
So I don't want anyone to think that I'm saying that I don't think she'll be able to do the job, because that's not true. I think I thought about what is important to me when I think about the opioid crisis and drug overdoses and how that leads into so many different parts of our society.
You don't think, as county executive, Angela Alsobrooks had to deal with an opioid crisis in Prince George's County?
I think every part of the state has had to deal with an opioid crisis, because Baltimore is Baltimore has a large problem. I was just seeing an article today about it. That's not what I heard her talk about on the campaign trail. I know that mental health, opioid addiction, and substance abuse, and criminal justice reform are A, things that he's passionate about, and B, things that I've seen him do the work on. That is why I kind of reject the notion of like, oh, you're just like, you just went there because he was gonna pay you. Because this wasn't I think both of these people are the same, therefore I'm just gonna go with whoever pays me more. I was like, I think both of these people do a great job. I live in this person's district. The things that they talk about are things that I am passionate about and are important to me. Therefore, like, I'm going to help this person win. If they don't win, I'm going to support the other candidate. And I think they will also do a great job. But like, these three main things that this person talks about are things that are personally important to me.
So you're a political insider.
Yeah, what they say.
For most voters that don't pay attention to politics on a regular basis, tune in at the last minute, when they see the lack of differentiation, that's a word that I think is used a lot in campaigns. When they see that, they seem to default to identity choices. To what extent do you think that played out?
The DMV has some of the most educated voters in the country. So I would never say that I think it came down to identity politics. I think that also diminishes what the county exec has done and who she is and the race that she ran and that her team ran. I do think in the last 6 or so weeks, we had a lot of bad earned media. And I think after all of the work we had done to talk about who Dave, like who the congressman is, when you have earned media showing portraying a different side of a person, it makes you wonder if that, like, if the person in the ads isn't who they are, it's the person on the news. You're looking at our delegation, there's no women. You're looking at our Senate in our delegation, there's no Black women. You're looking at the two candidates, they both have experience, they are both qualified for the role. Why wouldn't you go with the person who is qualified, who brings a new perspective, who, like, is not making, I mean, to be frank, like, gaffes? I don't think it's necessarily identity politics.
Speak to the missteps of the last 6 weeks that you just spoke about.
Yeah. The budget hearing wasn't great. The congressman misspoke and said a racial slur. And I think he actually handled it really well in being apologetic, reaching out to people and being like, it was a mistake. I misspoke. That was not the word that I meant to use. It didn't even make sense in the sentence, if we're being honest. But then there was the ad that didn't go over well with some folks.
Describe the ad.
It was a couple of folks from Prince George's County talking about preparedness for the Senate. And one of the electeds referred to our primary opponent as needing training wheels. That obviously did not go over very well with many people. And then Fox 5 DC took a tweet that we had done about criminal justice reform and kind of twisted it, that implied that he was implying that we should defund the police. And like that became a thing. And then he got in the reporter's face when they asked him about it at an event that he was at. He did an interview where they were asking him about his endorsement in Prince George's County. And he referenced the fact that he was proud to have the attorney general and a senior state senator and the state attorney and chair of the health and government operations. And, you know, the reporter kind of pushed and was like, well, like, she has like 30 endorsements. You don't have that many. And she was like, and his response was like, yeah, but I have the highest ranking people and her endorsers are low level. You can't say that. You can't call people low level. This race always had the opportunity and a door to be about race and to be about gender. And once that door is opened, it is very difficult to close it again. And I think, unfortunately, that was what the budget hearing did, was it opened the door for the conversation of this race to be about race. And I think it's unfortunate. I think it makes it difficult, especially for me as a Black woman. Like, I've worked for a lot of candidates. I am a proud Black woman. I'm a pro-Black Black woman. I'm not going up and defending anyone if they say something that appears to other people as being racist. Like, that's my hard line.
Wow.
Yeah, like, if you misspoke, I will go to bat for you. If, like, but if people are coming up and they are like, what you said is racist, I will clarify what you said. I will explain what you meant to say. But I can't, as a Black person, because if someone did this to me, I wouldn't be okay. Do I think that David Trone is racist? No. If someone comes up to me and says, I think this person is racist, I'm not, like, it is my job to make sure that they understand who he is. It is not my job to tell them who he is. Like, that is what voters, that is the voters' job, is to determine who they want. And I think they made a choice. You can't tell people of color, if they feel a way about someone or they didn't like something someone said. It's the same with sexual harassment in the workplace. If someone says that they were sexually harassed, you don't get to tell them they weren't. If someone feels like something someone said to them is offensive, you don't get to tell people whether or not they get to be offended. And once you move a conversation away from legislation, away from the work, and you move into a conversation about race, about gender, it is very difficult to tell people how they get to feel.
Were you personally conflicted after the comment that David Trone made?
In the budget hearing?
Yes.
He misspoke. So I think it would have been different if it like slipped out, right? Like if it was like a hot mic moment or something like that, right? That's very different.
But that's a weird word to use, not in usage commonly. So if you're not using that word in other contexts, I don't see how it escapes your mouth.
I think that's fair. I mean, I think, again, if you look at the, like, the quote of what he said, the slur doesn't make sense in the sentence, right? So, like, the word is not, like, the word does not fit the sentence structure of what was being said. So, like, everyone gets a mistake. You get, like, one time where you mess up, you did something you weren't supposed to do, and we get to say it was a mistake, and we move forward. I will say this, it was a long weekend for me. You're working for a rich white man, and I don't think it's a leap for people to assume that a wealthy white person has issues with race. So then when something like that happens, yeah, I spent the weekend getting text messages and emails from folks who were like, see, I told you, or like, how could you work for that person? That's when people start to refer to you as an Uncle Tom, right? Like, that's when people start to say that you are only there because you're getting paid. Like, the white man is paying you well, and that's why you're sitting there and letting these things happen. If I were to leave at that point in the campaign, it would say to people that that is who he is, and that's why she's leaving. And I think that is something that, like, you gotta keep, like, that is something that I had to keep in mind.
How close were you to thinking about quitting at that point?
Nowhere near it. That's just not the kind of person I am.
Okay. So tell me, what would you have done differently in retrospect?
I think that my team did a really good job with where a lot of them were when the camp, like, and where the campaign was. Because, like I said at the beginning, you know, like, second weekend, Senator Van Hollen's endorsing, right? And we're the political team. A lot of the people that I know in the state, a lot of the people that I have relationships with weren't on our side. And I think, for on a lot of campaigns, you have people come from out of state, they do what they do, They don't care what relationships get burned. They don't care how, like, they're like, I'm here to help this candidate win. And if I got to burn down the state and rebuild it in order to do it, I'm going to do it and I'm going to leave. For me and a lot of folks on my team, we can't do that. We still live here. We still work here. We still want to have careers here. So it, like, the people who are endorsing our opponent, those are my friends. The people working for her are my friends. So I do care about how we talk about her, even as a Black woman. Like, I do care about how we talk about her. I do care about the things that we are doing, the way that we're moving within the state, because I'm friends with these people. I'm going to go get drinks with them. I'm going to go hang out with them. And I don't need people looking at me crazy. I don't want people to get my staff crazy. And for some of my junior staff, they're going to want to get other jobs here. And I would never want a decision that was made without them to reflect on them. And I think my team did a really good job of being able to build relationships and of being able to kind of like make a way out of no way when you're in, when you're in a county and like the county executive, like most of the city council, like the county council has endorsed your opponent. A lot of people don't want to like come out and support you. And they were still able to find people to build relationships, to do amazing events where we had like 150, 200, you know, that was 500 people. And that's just grit. That's just hard work. And I think I'm really proud of the work my team was able to do on that front. And I can tell that they did good work because even though we lost, people are asking about them. They want to know what they're doing next. They want to know if they need help. And I'm really thankful to my friends in the campaign space, in the Maryland space, who are wanting to look out for them. I think in terms of do differently, I think on campaigns, it's really hard to say because no one decision is the reason why anyone loses. And I think every time on a campaign, people are like, oh, this one thing would have gone differently, or like this couple of things would have gone differently, things would be different. But like, that's not how time works, right? Like, that's not how life works. It's a culmination of decisions, a culmination of strategy, a culmination of actions that either work well or they don't. So I think things happen how they happened. I think the things that were within my team and I's control, we did a great job. We got a lot of endorsements at like the federal and state and local level. We got a lot of labor support. We had great support from the African diaspora, the Latino community, the AAPI community. We built a bridge where there wasn't one before. And that was what my team set out to do. And it's what they did. And things didn't turn out the way that we would have wanted. But as I told my team on election night, I wouldn't have changed a single thing that any of them did, even the times that they messed up.
I want you to address this issue of money in politics. The general understanding of politics is that money rules. And yet we found
money did not rule. Yeah, campaigns do cost money. There are paid for lines on anything that a campaign prints. And if it's not a paid for line, it's printed in house. There was a time in the United States that people bought elections. There were these political barons who literally would go up to people and give them cash and tell them who to vote for. That is not the case in the United States anymore. You can divide the amount of money spent by the amount of votes and use that to determine how much was spent per voter. 80% of self-funded candidates lose because it's not just about money. Money can get you name recognition. Money can get you events. Money can get you a lot of things. But this is not a country where you can actually buy someone's vote. You still have to put in the work. Money in politics. Not in elections, and like I'm not talking about money like spent, like self-funders, but money given to elected officials by companies and the influence that that can have over said elected officials is a conversation that needs to be had. I don't think that every single elected official is affected by the people who give them money. I do think that in this country, if you are a business owner and your business is affected by state and local legislation, giving to those candidates is a way to open the door to them listening to you and what your needs are.
The consequence of making that argument is that he acted pragmatically. Is he going to act pragmatically or by principle in the future? And that creates a cloud.
I don't think they're the same thing. When I think about how he is a business person, I think about how he treated his employees, right? His employees were 75% full-time. His employees had healthcare. I don't think it is fair in a system where giving an elected official a check could be the difference between getting a meeting with them and them not returning your phone call, to say that it is a question of principle if that business owner decides to cut them a check, because we're not doing anything to change the system which allows that to happen.
Okay. What are your predictions for the general now?
I think it's going to be difficult. I think this will be the first time in a very long time, probably before my parents even like immigrated to America, that we'll have a competitive general election. And I think it is in the party of my heart's best interest to nationalize the Senate race. I think we have to make sure we do it in plain terms and then making it clear what it actually means. Like, Larry Hogan cannot go to the Senate and be an island of one. And even the Republicans who are considered more moderate, the Mitt Romneys, the Murkowskis, somehow when it comes down to it, when you're looking up the votes, they still find themselves voting with the Republican Party. And I think on the other end, Larry Hogan is going to try to be very strategic. This is someone who, the first time he won, used like public finance. The second time, didn't even have to use like most of his war chest. And there's going to be millions of dollars flooding into the state. Mitch McConnell said Maryland, I think it was like second, third on their priority list. And I think he's going to try to localize the race and talk about, you know, didn't you like me when I was governor? I'll do the same in the Senate. But being an executive and being a legislator are not necessarily the same thing.
Michelle Ingwafen, seems like you're back home in the Maryland Democratic Party.
I never left.
Thank you.
Thank you. This was fun.
That's David Trones, U.S. Senate Campaign Political Director, Michelle Ingwafen. You're listening to I Hate Politics. I'm Sunil Dasgupta. I'll be back with lessons from our conversation and the wrap up. What lessons can we draw from my conversation with Michelle Ingwafen, the political director for David Trones' U.S. Senate campaign? First, we think of elections being about candidates, but there are thousands upon thousands of campaign professionals and volunteers working behind the scenes to get their candidates elected. These jobs are stressful, often intertwined with personal politics, and uncertain. We have now ended a second major election cycle with interviews with campaign workers. Coincidentally, we had a volunteer from David Trones' congressional campaign, Abby Green, on the show after the 2022 primary. Check out that interview if you are interested. Second, money in politics is a peculiar thing. It is necessary, but not sufficient. David Trones spent $60 million to Angela Alsobrooks' $6 million. And that 90% difference was not enough. Alsobrooks won by over 10% of the votes. That is not close. Money only matters in conjunction with other political strategies. It is not so much that money drives politics. The better question is this: under what circumstances does money prevail, and when does it not? The answer is not clear. This lack of clarity or uncertainty leads us to spin conspiracy theories. Ingoffin is right. There was a time in the United States when elections were bought. There are places around the world where elections are still bought. There is quite a bit of political corruption in the United States today, as in other countries. And this is where we really get our name, I Hate Politics. But this corruption is not in elections narrowly defined. We do have an overwhelming incumbency effect, which can sometimes be part of political corruption, but it is hard to separate that corruption from public service itself. If there is a big lesson to learn from the David Trone campaign, it is this: money alone does not drive political outcomes. Lastly, and perhaps it is a caveat to the big lesson, one thing we did not talk about is how being short of money can be used as a virtue. Are you going to let this rich guy buy the election? That is a question asked quite a bit in the Maryland U.S. Senate primary. But also less visible is how fundraising is its own political action. That when regular people give you money, they will follow it up with their vote. Not being called to donate to a campaign may very well take away an effective instrument of voter outreach. That's all for this episode of I Hate Politics, where we aim to stem the decline in local news by working with community voices. I Hate Politics is produced by me, Sunil Dasgupta, and assistant producers Daniel Galeo and Catherine Amaya Escobar, with support from University of Maryland, Baltimore County. I direct UMBC's political science program at the universities at Shady Grove in Montgomery County, where, among other things, we explore and learn about politics, government, and society close to home. Music for this episode comes from Silver Spring rock and roll musician and writer John Braden, who performs under the band name Mr. Tree Frog. The songs come from his latest album, Poke. If you want to share your music on the show or know someone else who might want to, please email us at producer@ihppod.org. I hope you'll subscribe and share the podcast as we bring you stories about politics close to you and to your home. See you next time. I just can't let you get the last. I just can't let you get the last. Go drop that guy. Now take it safely to your TV.